This is Night Call, the new nationwide listener call-in show on vital issues. Tonight's subject, what the little guy can do. Tonight's guest, economist Robert Theobald, who started the debate about a guaranteed annual income. You speak for yourself and ask your questions directly by calling Collect Night Call's national phone number. Area code 212-749-3311 or in the New York area, 866-5010. Night Call's host in New York City is Del Shields.
Good evening. Before we begin our Night Call show for this evening, we would like first to thank all of the fine people at WAME in Miami, Florida, who were so very kind to us during our broadcast on Thursday and made it possible for us to broadcast from Miami. And we would also like to apologize to all of the fine people at WMRP-FM in Flint, Michigan, where last night we inadvertently identified the station as WMEM. And the first Night Call listener we had last night was Mrs. Beatrice Churchill, who was hearing Night Call over WMRP-FM. The preface to Robert Theobald's new book, An Alternative Future for America, begins by stating what its editors consider to be the greatest single problem facing all Americans, and implying a possible solution to it. It says, and we quote, "The United States is the most powerful nation in history, but it now appears that the price of such national power is the increasing and eventually complete powerlessness of the individual citizen. The almost perpetual state of civil strife which has recently emerged can be seen as a direct result of the refusal of rapidly growing numbers of people to accept this intolerable condition of powerlessness. Unfortunately, the tactics of lawlessness and violence used by those who seek to remedy their powerless condition are giving rise to an equally intolerable condition of social anarchy. The counter-tactics of repression are in turn leading us to the development of that very thing we have all thought can't happen here, the police state. Nobody will be free in America, and few will have any real power over their own lives if it becomes necessary to have policemen and or soldiers on every street corner of our cities. And yet, such a prospect is clearly possible in the light of recent events. Americans neither deserve nor want such a future, nor do they have to accept such a future. Traditionally, Americans have looked forward to a future of increased freedom rather than diminished freedom. Such a future still lies before us, but to get there, we must change some of our social and psychological attitudes. Our present social and psychological attitudes are leading us to disaster," unquote. Robert Theobald styles himself as a social economist, one who concerns himself with social as well as economic problems. He is a Briton who has lived in this country for the past 10 years. Mr. Theobald is standing by in Memphis, Tennessee, to answer your questions and share your comments as well as your conversation about what the little guy can do to creatively change our society and prevent all of us from losing what's left of our individual freedom. You may call him direct by calling area code 212-749-3311. And, of course, you may call us collect. That's national calls on area code 212-749-3311. In the New York area, you may call us at 866-5010. That's local calls only on 866-5010. Mr. Theobald?
Yes, I'm here.
Thank you so much for being with us. First, we apologize for our engineering hang-up there, but I think we're okay now.
Well, I gather.
Right. Did you get a chance to hear Mr. Bailey?
Yes, I heard the question. I think that the answer is that if we fail to find ways for black and poor people, and indeed young people, to work within the system, we may have massive attempts at violence and revolution, but they will not work. All that this could do would be to tear the country apart and then to lead towards repression.
Well, taking this into account, if you read The Death of the President, I think it was by Manchester, in his description of the transfer of power, he projects the image that this country, or the powers to be, the power elite themselves, were in a mass of confusion. Now, taking this into account, let's say another proposed or projected assassination of a president or a leader of this country could set it into turmoil. Would there be any hope of a revolutionary force or force intent in bringing bringing a meaningful social change through other means in terms of, let's say, a direct violent impact with the powers of this country? Could it bring about a meaningful change, or would that be a proper tactic?
Well, let me say very clearly that in my mind, anybody who believes that it is possible to bring about positive, meaningful social change in this sort of world through trying to overturn the establishment is not basically aware of the realities of the situation. And I think that what we have to face up to is that up to the present time, there is, I think, a very grave danger that the establishment, and I don't like that word, but those people who have power to change are using rhetoric rather than bringing about the change they talk about. But I think that particularly a person like myself who is trying to bring about change has to continue to try to find ways to bring the establishment to realize that change is in their own interest, and that while it is quite impossible, I think, for people outside the system to bring about successful, meaningful social change, they can bring about a system of total repression which would be in nobody's interest, whether it be the establishment's interest or the interest of those presently excluded from the society.
Well, also take this into account, that with the establishment, through the years, through history, it is demonstrated to people of an oppressed class that they cannot be trusted, that the risk is too great, to use, so to speak, in Leroy Burnett's book, Confrontation, Black and White. The risk is too great. The establishment has proven to oppress people, both in the past and now in the present, that they are putting up a fraud, a front, a facade, and that they have no intention of bringing about any meaningful change, because if they did, they would sanction the existence of the Black Panther Party, they would sanction the existence of SNCC, they would sanction the existence of all people who are crying for freedom and liberation. Certainly they sanction Patrick Henry, Thomas Paine, Jefferson, Washington. Why is the present establishment so set against putting out people who want equality and a full realization of the so-called American ideal in words and both in fact? Now, I'm saying this is that if our gradualism of poor people, oppressed people, have not brought about a meaningful change, because I don't consider the acts that Roosevelt put in, nor Truman, nor Kennedy, or anyone, any of the presidents, as far back as Lincoln, as being meaningful. They were always set up with the intent of keeping poor people oppressed, of setting poor whites and poor blacks against each other. But it has been mainly directed at the blacks. And it's the question is that, can blacks tolerate this, or should they tolerate it? In my opinion, no. Because I feel right now is that the white establishment, the powers to be, the power elite in this country, has been treacherous, and black people cannot trust them anymore. And I'm saying this is that if we can't work with you on the inside, and I'm speaking both from my observations and from my experiences, that the situation has to be taken on the outside. And I don't think that this country is as strong as it presents itself to be, simply because of the events, especially the assassination of President Kennedy, the fiasco that it was in terms of them presenting, the establishment presenting a smooth transition of powers. And I'm saying this is that...
Mr. Bailey, I think we should be kind enough to allow Mr. Theobald, who is our guest tonight, give him a chance to respond to your questions, inasmuch as he has been one of the critics of the, as he says, he doesn't want to use the word establishment, but he has been a critic of it, and he has also proposed some rather meaningful and constructive suggestions. So if you'd be kind enough, we'll allow him to answer. Thank you so much for calling, sir. This is NYCAL in New York, and our national telephone number is area code 212-749-3311. That's area code 212-749-3311. And if you'd like to call us collect, of course, you may feel free to call us collect. And our local telephone number is 866-5010. That's 866-5010. Our guest tonight is Mr. Robert Theobald, who is calling in from Memphis, Tennessee. Mr. Theobald, we'll give you about a minute to respond to Mr. Bailey before we break for station identification and take some additional calls.
Okay, very briefly, particularly as I didn't have the time to come in right at the very beginning. It seems to me that people should know that I'm probably one of the most fundamental critics of the failure of the present establishment to respond to what I think is a meaningful demand of the poor, the blacks, the minority groups, students, and women to their present conditions of powerlessness. My argument, and I want to cut this short because I know we have to take a break, is not in terms of whether we should or should not respond, but in terms of strategy and tactics. And I think that, quite frankly, there is no realism in a strategy which says it can be done through violent revolution. It's based essentially on a misapprehension about whether the establishment wishes to move. And I'd like sort of to pose, before we break, just the statement that I believe in, a very brief statement by Pogo when he said, "We have met the enemy and we are they."
Mr. Theobald, we'll be right back with more calls from across the country right after station identification. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Robert Theobald after station identification. America is growing smaller. Speed of communication, speed of travel, and the worldwide revolution in human rights. These things bind us together into a common destiny. One man's problem is every man's problem. More and more we realize the only real problem is the human problem. People who need jobs, better education, better places to live, better medical care, and better hope for the future. A chance to become part of the American dream of freedom and opportunity. But for the American dream to succeed, each of us must be responsive to the needs of others. To give a damn about our brother or our sister, black or white. You'll find some answers to how you can help give a damn, how you can offer your help, in a new booklet called Whose Crisis? Yours. You can get a copy without charge by writing to Night Call, Pomona, New York, zip 10970. That's Night Call, Pomona, P-O-M-O-N-A, New York. Speak for yourself. Collect on Night Call. Area code 212-749-3311 or 866-5010 to Robert Theobald about what the little guy can do. Again, Del Shields.
And we're back in New York, and our guest, Mr. Robert Theobald, calling in from Memphis, Tennessee. And Mr. Theobald, again, we apologize for not getting you in on the beginning of the show. We had a technical problem. And I think if we can spend just a few moments in this segment to kind of develop some groundwork and establish the rules so that our listeners will know exactly what subject we are discussing and just what your particular credentials are. First, what are some of the specifics that you discuss often when you say we are losing our individual freedom?
Well, I think that what has happened is that America has been incredibly successful in achieving what she set out to do, which was to provide a decent standard of living for every citizen and to minimize the amount of toil that was necessary. And now suddenly we've done all this and we, for some reason, are terrified of this. And we, therefore, are not willing to take the steps which will provide people with the, if you like, new freedoms which are possible, the freedom to have a decent standard of living, the freedom to have a meaningful job, a meaningful type of work, rather than simply be caught up in meaningless activity, that because we will not do this, and because people, I think, quite justifiably react from being cut out from the rights accorded to other people in their society, we are seeing violence develop as people say, no, there is no right to keep us outside the society. And then we are finding other people saying that we will not tolerate violence, a call for those rather remarkable words, law and order, which seem to me to be just a statement that essentially we want to keep people in their place. And then the losing of many of the traditional rights which have been available to citizens in this country.
Well, may we discuss for just a moment what we're talking about when we say that the freedoms. A man gets into his automobile and he's out on the freeway or the expressway, and he must observe all of the signs, and the signs tell him exactly which exits are available. He has to stop for the various traffic lights. He must observe the various stop signs. He is told where to park his car, and he is told how much the parking costs. He walks into his building, and he is directed to the elevators by the various signs and also by the various men who perhaps are the starters there. And he takes the car up to a particular floor, and he goes to his desk, and he sits behind the desk, and there he is to obey all of the rules and regulations of the particular company which he works for. He is told how much money he will get for his services, and he is told how many hours that he will work in order to receive X number of dollars of compensation. Now, where is his freedom today?
You see, I think that you have just beautifully described how we have allowed the industrial age to grab us by the neck and to take away the freedoms we used to have, and not to realize the extraordinary freedoms which are potentially ours because of the development of the machines which are coming, which can take over all of the nonsense work which so many of us are engaged in, and allow us to start moving towards meaningful activity. I think that what you have described, in a sense, is the frustration we all feel of being more and more bottled up in a set of rules because we have failed to imagine a society, failed to imagine the freedoms which are potentially ours in the new form of society into which we are moving. And what I think, one of the reasons I think we are seeing so much backlash is because people feel, in a sense, that they are being backed up against a wall by events that they do not understand, and that we have not given them the sense of hope which is so potentially available to us at this time. The chance of a more human and a more meaningful society has never been as great as it is today. But we will not take advantage of it, and because we will not, I feel that we're moving away from that potential and towards the potential of a police state in the very near future.
You have stated, and I'm a bit certain that we're going to quote you correctly, because I'm reading from, at this point, from an extract from a release about you, where you are credited with saying that Americans have a pathological desire to toil and must be brought to the realization that work will be irrelevant in the automated age ahead of us. The old industrial age ideal of a job for all must now give way to the ideal of sufficient money for all to live on and education to enable everyone to actively participate in society. Now, in that particular statement, am I right in assuming that this is the core and the center of much of the labor management frustration today?
I think this is right. I think that we find people, well, in our society, everybody needs a job if they're going to eat. And many jobs are being replaced or potentially replaced by machines. And people are not about to see their job go out of the window if they can possibly avoid it. So we see greater and greater tension between people as they try to hold on to their jobs, when, in a sense, they could be replaced. And we're not willing to look at the issues raised by a society in which everybody does not have to toil, although I'm not saying that everybody doesn't have to work. I think that it is essential for a functioning society that everybody makes a contribution to his society. What I hear from many people is that they're not complaining about the necessity of working, but they're complaining that the sort of things that are available to do not have meaning for them or indeed for their society.
Mr. Theobald, let's welcome Mrs. Myrtle Lewis, who is hearing Night Call over KNOK in Fort Worth and Dallas, Texas. Mrs. Lewis?
Yes.
Good evening.
Hello.
Your question, ma'am.
I would like to know exactly how far can the city authority go in incriminating a person on their job and to and fro from their job, also denying them the privilege of everything.
Did you hear the question, Mr. Theobald?
Not really.
How far can the city government go in incriminating, is that your question?
Yes, and also to and fro from your job and at home. I would like to...
Well, your question is not specific enough, Mrs. Lewis.
Well, Sever answered that I have a job, see. And it's not very much, but it means a lot to me. I am incriminated by the city authorities going to and fro from work. Also, I am denied the privilege of any activities that I anticipate in. They're always present to blackball that. I want to know just exactly how far can they go.
But aren't you asking me to answer a legal question which I cannot possibly have the competence to answer? In other words, you know, I don't know really, if you're asking me what are the legal rights of the city in which you work, I really do not, cannot, you know, answer that question.
Mrs. Lewis?
Yeah.
Do you feel that the situation that you're faced with, do you feel that it's based on a racial...
Yes, I do. I feel that it's more than that because I'm held back. You see, it's making it pretty rugged on my children. And it's getting pretty tough to live in Fort Worth.
Well, may I suggest this? Do you have an active NAACP in your area?
It doesn't do any good. Everything is tied up. I mean, when you have, it's just like, you know, city has power and they have money. I have nothing but a voice.
And there are no active groups?
Everybody is afraid. Everybody in here is afraid. Even in the, I work at, in the community action, and those people are afraid still.
What about local political?
No help.
And this is the condition for most black people in your area, or
yes,
just you personally?
Yes, it is, especially me. And I would like to get it solved, if I could. I don't like violence, and I don't like
Mrs. Lewis, my suggestion is, first, I don't know if you want to go into the specifics of what your problem is, but my suggestion to you would be this. If you'd be kind enough to call us after 12:30 on the same room that you've called, if there's any way that we can try to give you some advice, we certainly will try to. So if you'd like to call us after we get off the air at 749-3311, area code 212, you may again call us collect, and we'll see what we can do to help you.
At what time?
Right after 12:30, as soon as we were off the air.
12:30 tonight?
Right.
Well, I'll do that because it's getting pretty rugged with my children.
All right, we'll see what we can do.
All right.
All right, thank you so very much for calling.
You're welcome.
We'll take our next call from Philadelphia. Mr. John Davis is hearing Night Call over WHAT. Mr. Davis?
Hello.
Right. How are you, sir?
Fine, thank you. And yourself?
Fine, thank you.
Oh, the lady that was just on, you said to call you after 12:30. Well, if she lives in Fort Worth, Texas, the time is a little different.
Well, if she's still listening, she'll know what time we're off. We're only on for an hour. Right.
My question was, how do they expect the little man to do something when the people hold him back? You know, if you get a job and you may be poor, and they'll think, well, you're a dummy, so you can't do nothing. They have someone standing over top of you all of the time telling you what to do. I mean, after you do something for a week, the same thing. You really don't need anybody to stand there and tell you what to do all the time. And this makes, well, I don't know about everybody, but it makes me sort of mad, you know. And I quit quite a few jobs.
Well, first, let's get down to the specifics. We have Mr. Theobald with us, and he's a most outstanding gentleman. I think he's got some great ideas in terms of offering to us for our own stimulation as well as our education. Now, let's take a specific example, and let's see what we can do with it. Now, you state, what can you do when they? Now, who are you talking about when you say they?
Well, mainly in the establishment, the people, the bosses, the white bosses, and so on and so forth. Well, for instance, I worked for a sweater company about 6 months ago. All right, so I went into the sweater company. I wanted to become a knitter, so they told me, well, we'll put you in as soon as we get an opening. And they got a few openings, but I mean, they are white boys that come in and that weren't there as long as I was. I was working in the shipping department, and they put them right into the jobs. I mean, what do you do about this?
You know, in a sense, you surprise me, because I think probably the biggest complaint of people is that they can't find reliable employees at this point. But, you know, in a sense, when that title was chosen, I'm not sure it's exactly the one I would have chosen, I was thinking more about what can the person do to bring about social change, rather than, in a sense, how can he get ahead in his own business? Because my particular concern at this time is, how can we build a system which will bring justice to the people who are oppressed in the society? And I was thinking particularly about that area of concern.
Mr. Theobald, I'm going to ask you if you'd be kind enough to hold it until after station identification. And Mr. Davis, thank you for calling. We'll try to answer you. Thank you so much, sir. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Robert Theobald after station identification.
Listen to the voices of Night Call.
Prophet Isaiah says, "Your cities are burning because there is injustice in your land, and the Lord will not hear you because your hands are full of blood." Now, I will interpret that to say the United States is on fire, its cities are burning because there's injustice in the land, and the Lord above will not hear the cries of people like Lyndon Baines Johnson because his hands are full of blood.
Stokely Carmichael quotes the Bible in support of militancy. And a National Guard commander says ballots, not bullets, are the best ammunition.
I think you have a tremendous power in the democracy of the ballot box. It's much stronger than bullets. You do have the ballot box, which is far stronger than any sort of suppression.
Night Call, the new nationwide call-in show on vital issues, each weeknight on this station.
Speak for yourself, collect on Night Call. Area code 212-749-3311 or 866-5010 to Robert Theobald about what the little guy can do. Again, Del Shields.
And we return to Night Call for the second half hour, and we welcome the various Night Call stations who join us for the second half hour. And our guest tonight calling in from Memphis, Tennessee, is Mr. Robert Theobald. And prior to station identification, we had a question coming in from Mr. John Davis of Philadelphia, a young man who had been working for a sweater manufacturer, as I understand it, and was hoping to get a job as a knitter or a position as a knitter, and the position never came to him. And he felt that there was possibly discrimination being displayed or being shown by the employers. And again, it fits in with our discussion tonight of what the little guy can do. Mr. Theobald, what can the little guy do in that kind of situation?
Well, you know, I hate to discuss cases that I don't really know what happened, because you know as well as I do the real difficulties about, you know, specifics and this sort of thing. I guess I'd say that I'm not sure. You know, are we talking race? If we're talking race, this becomes an issue to be taken up with one of the U.S. government agencies, essentially, which is not a very satisfactory route, as we all know.
Well, may I inject this, sir? I don't think that we can actually talk race, period. If we're talking about what the little guy can do, and we're talking about the establishment, we're talking about a society today in which, as you have stated, that the freedom of the average individual is slowly but surely disappearing. Let's kind of take it and put it on its broader scale. Let's think in terms of what does a little guy do when the union says that we will walk, and perhaps there are 7,000 people in the union and only 2,000 vote for the walkout. What happens, I think in terms of my a very personal experience just a few months ago. The street in front of our office all of a sudden became a full bus stop. I don't know if the city ever took a moment out to ask the various merchants in the area whether or not they desired to have a full bus stop there. All of me knew that one morning there were 7 positions open for people to park their cars, and the next morning they were all buses. What does the man do? What does the little man do in the society of today? You've stated that the freedoms are disappearing. Now, does the individual just give up entirely, or does he have an out?
Well, I think you've got to take this out even further. I think we've got to start asking, how does the individual participate in the process of bringing about change in the society so that he is not lost in the mass? And I think that this gets us into the whole thesis of what methods do we use to bring about social change. And as I understand it, we've really got to do 2 things at this point. One is we have got to bring people information about what this new world which we're entering is really like, so that they are aware of the hope in the situation. And the second thing is we have to get people into situations where they can discuss this and decide what ought to happen. I mean, if you take, it seems to me, let's take your bus stop situation. It becomes, it seems to me, something for that neighborhood to decide upon, and then to find ways to bring this to the city government. And I think that you then run into the fact, of course, that city government is notoriously unresponsive. And this then, I think, brings us to the point that we have to find new ways of bringing the city closer to the people, which I think means breaking the city back down into neighborhoods, which ties into that point about the green force, which is really only a statement that the neighborhood must police itself according to its own norms, rather than that you can have, in a sense, the same norms across a whole city, where what people consider criminal and wrong in one section of the city is not necessarily considered criminal or wrong in another section of the city.
In this highly technical and highly industrialized society that we live in, is it possible that we are not actually giving a true definition of freedom as we know it today? Perhaps we need a new definition of what we thought freedom was.
No, I'm not sure that it's as much that as that we need to realize that it is possible to have communities in which differing things are considered acceptable, and that a type of freedom which one community would consider intolerable may be considered perfectly appropriate in another community. One of the things that comes, I think, very clear to me is the whole attitude of an inner city area compared with a middle class area towards noise at certain hours of the night. Middle class people tend to go to bed at 11 o'clock. The inner city tends not to go to bed that early. And therefore your whole norms and freedoms, it seems to me, vary with the type of life you live, and that I think we've got to get round to realizing that not all freedoms can be applied in all communities, but that communities have a right to be different in the way that they live.
Mr. Theobald, Miss Audrey Descartes, or Descartes, is hearing Night Call over WFCR-FM in Amherst, Massachusetts, and we'll take that call. Miss Descartes?
Yes, Miss Dukert.
Dukert, I'm sorry, thank you.
Audrey, how are you?
Well, Robert, I would like to ask, since I have read your 2 books, The Challenge of Abundance and The Rich and the Poor, with much enjoyment and with much enlightenment. I know that you advocate the guaranteed annual income, and I'm also aware of what the Mothers for Adequate Welfare have been saying in Roxbury and other such points. How will this guaranteed annual income affect the social groups other than the Mothers for Adequate Welfare? How will it affect the rich people? How will it affect us school teachers? How will it affect students, the middle class?
I think the basic reality. By the way, I should perhaps explain to the audience that this is a friend of mine I haven't talked to for a couple of years, and that was why I reacted that way.
We're still speaking, though, aren't we?
We sure are. I think that the most important thing about a guaranteed income is that it is going to draw the poor into the society. It is going to say to the poor that they are a part of the society who we wish to give a minimum income to and therefore a chance to build their lives. Now, I think the consequences of this are most obviously clear for social workers who will lose the power, in a sense, to dominate the client, the welfare client. But a surprising number of younger welfare workers think this is the best thing that could happen. I think that for the teacher, particularly the teacher in the inner city school, you're going to find a brighter, more intelligent child who has been fed and is therefore capable of thinking. I think that if you look at the rich, I think the real issue that lies behind the guaranteed income is a question of whether those people who are better off are willing to allow some of the $40 billion annual increase in income to go to the poor, or whether they are determined that they're going to take all of it, which has been the pattern, or nearly all of it, up to the present time.
Uh-huh.
And I don't think that we can ever get a guaranteed income until those of us who are better off say, look, we are willing to tolerate a slower rate of increase in our income, or maybe even a standstill for a period of time, so that those people at the bottom of the society have a chance to at least share in a reasonable, minimal amount of money.
What do you feel about stipulating what the income shall be spent for? Now, for instance, I do not have a television set, and yet the Mothers for Adequate Welfare are marching and demanding television sets. I don't want a television set. They do. Does the handing out agency have any right, or do you think they should have any right to stipulate what the money should be spent for?
It seems to me that you cannot give that power. But it also seems to me that, let's not talk about television or radio, but just the general issue, that the welfare worker gains far more influence and possibility of guiding and helping the welfare client once the power to make statements is taken away from her.
Uh-huh.
And I anticipate that two people in a meaningful human relationship where, in a sense, nobody has the power over the other one is going to be much more able to say to the person, look, do you really think that's the best way to spend what is still a very limited amount of money?
But should anybody have the power to say this to another one?
Well, I personally
don't. That's a worrisome thing, too, isn't it?
I personally don't believe so.
And no.
I suppose what distinguishes me from a lot of liberals is that I really believe that one of the biggest threats to us at the moment is the, I think, still continuing trend among a lot of people to say that the answer to something is yet another government program with government bureaucrats in control of yet another set of people's lives.
Yeah.
And I'd rather, I think, gamble on people's capacity to handle their own lives rather than on somebody else's capacity to handle their lives.
Right.
Mrs. Ducat, thank you so much for calling.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. We'll take our next call from Mr. Ronald Grunt, who's hearing Night Call over WTRN in Tyrone, Pennsylvania. Mr. Grunt, good evening, sir.
Good evening, sir.
Your question.
I was wondering, you had stated a while ago about the guidelines, let's say the stop signs and the turn signals and the traffic lights and stuff, guiding the people. What guidelines are you going to use? I mean, they have to have some type of guidelines, and these guidelines are always established, and they're doing very well, I think. And also on these individual rights, what specific rights are being taken from the person or people?
Well, let me put it the other way around and say that we are not according to people the rights that they could have. But beyond that, and I think much more seriously, the person from the inner city who is listening, the person in Mississippi where I was until this evening, is going to tell you that there are many rights accorded to the people who are in the mainstream of this society from which they are excluded and which they should share in, and that they are protesting very vehemently their exclusion from these rights and are stating that the time has come when the society must provide them with the rights to live in the way that the majority of the society is allowed to do.
Does that answer your question, sir?
Well, partially, but I think the major problem lies with the industrialists, because they control the money in the United States, and if we're going to guarantee income for a certain group of people who don't have the earning power of other people who make a substantial amount to live on, I think those are the people that should be approached, because they're the one that controls the purse strings of the United States. And if the people are going to be guaranteed an income, you're going to have to talk to them people, not only to the government, and try and change the government.
But a lot of, well, 2 points. One, I think that there are a remarkable number of industrialists who are already in favor of the guaranteed income. Secondly, I don't believe that things happen because you talk to any establishment alone. When we sort of had a title like "What Can the Little Guy Do?", I think the little guy, and I hate that phrase, can decide what he believes is moral, and he can bring pressure, and he can bring knowledge to those people in public office who make the decisions as to what should happen. And I think that basically our Congress and the other decision-making patterns in this country respond to what the people believe rather than the other way around.
Mr. Grant, thank you so much for calling, sir.
Thank you, sir.
This is NyCall in New York tonight, What the Little Guy Can Do. Our guest, Mr. Robert Theobald from Memphis, who is calling in, rather, from Memphis, Tennessee. And Mr. Theobald, of course, is the first person who proposed to America that there should be a guaranteed annual income, among other things. And we'll return to our guest right after station identification.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Robert Theobald after station identification. Tomorrow night on Night Call, presidential candidate Democratic Senator George McGovern on why he should be the Democratic presidential nominee and the next president of the United States. Some say the whole last-minute McGovern campaign is just a Kennedy holding operation, a rallying point for dissident Democrats who want to nominate a Kennedy, in this case, Senator Edwards from Massachusetts. McGovern says he's not kidding. He's seriously running for the presidency and makes the point that he'll go to the convention next week with considerably more votes on the first ballot than Wendell Willkie had in 1940's Republican convention. Democratic Senator, presidential candidate George McGovern of South Dakota, on why he should be the next president of the United States. Tonight on Night Call. Speak for yourself, collect on Night Call. Area code 212-749-3311 or 866-5010 to Robert Theobald about what the little guy can do. Again, Del Shields.
And we are back in New York once again, and our guest, of course, Mr. Robert Theobald, calling in from Memphis, Tennessee, and we have a local call this time. Mr. Vernon Rivers is hearing Night Call over WLIB-FM. Mr. Rivers? Mr. Rivers? Good evening, sir. Mr. Rivers is not with us, all right? While we're waiting to take up another call, tonight we're discussing what the little guy can do. Mr. Theobald, what was the reaction when you first proposed the idea of a guaranteed annual income? Did you get the keys to various cities around the country? Did the mayors come out and ask you to be a great after-dinner speaker?
No, I don't think that's the way you put it. In fact, a lot of the way I now see the world results from the fact that I went down and talked to a Senate subcommittee fairly soon after I first made the proposal in 63. And I was told it might be a good idea, but it wasn't politically feasible, and I sort of puzzled about that one, and I eventually decided that what was meant was the votes weren't there. And
then decided that basically if you wanted to bring about change, you brought about change by going to the people in the country and by changing their views, and that eventually the politicians would discover that this was an issue on which they could win votes. I think the extraordinary thing, if you look at this realistically, is the speed with which the guaranteed income has been accepted in the country, so that this is very much of a real immediate political issue in this election year. And I still think that we may see considerable movement on it. It's very interesting that Governor Agnew has come out for what is essentially a guaranteed income, which is equalized welfare in every state, and that's essentially a guaranteed income scheme of one sort.
Most of the protest against the guaranteed income, does this stem from the fact that there are millions of people in this country who feel that some people will be getting something for nothing?
Well, that's how it's put, but I think that, well, that's one of them, but I don't think that's the chief thing. I think the chief thing is that basically people believe that everybody would stop working. And my challenge to this has always been, but would you stop working? And the number of people who would stop working themselves is very low. They just have a very low opinion of their neighbors and friends.
Mr. Theobald, Mr. Necht is hearing Night Call over WCWA in Toledo, Ohio. We'll hear from him. Mr. Necht? Mr. Necht from Toledo, Ohio? All right. While we're waiting for him, let's try Mr. Gray, who is hearing Night Call over WBUR-FM in Boston.
Hey.
Hello.
Yes, this is Mr. Gray.
Mr. Gray, how are you, sir?
Fine, thank you. I think one problem with the little man, as it's called, is I don't think he understands what his civil rights are. And this is one thing that has to be explained. Because, for instance, the poor white thinks by his color, he is entitled to something special. And the black man really doesn't know what his civil rights are. And this is just one thing that I like to put forward.
But I think you can take this much further. It seems to me that what is presently wrong with our society is that people don't understand very much about the society at all. And somebody, Churchill once said that democracy is the worst of all possible forms of government except all the others. But that's only true. It's only, in a sense, the least bad of all forms of government if citizens are informed about what is going on. And it seems to me that Night Call is one beginning attempt to really begin to inform people about what the nature of our society is, what the possible things are that could be done, what people's rights are, but that we need something infinitely more massive if we are to produce an informed citizenry who can make intelligent decisions about the sort of options we now have before us.
Gray?
Yes.
Mr. Gray, does that kind of answer you?
Yes, yes, I understood it.
All right, sir. Thank you so much for calling.
Thank you.
This is Night Call in New York. What the little guy can do, and there are a lot of little guys like us out here. And our guest tonight is Mr. Robert Theobald. And let's see, we'll try Mr. Connect. Is he with us now? Mr. Connect?
Yes.
Good evening, sir. I'm very sorry we didn't get you on the first time. You're calling in from WCWA in Toledo, Ohio.
Right.
Right, sir.
Okay, I have a question which I think takes in three different facets of this, the issue of a guaranteed annual wage and perhaps providing some sort of economic democracy as well as simply a political democracy. Now, I'm wondering what Mr. Theobald would see as the necessary transformations that would have to be made in the economic system in order to bring about the kind of economic justice and the bringing into the economic system of these people who have been sort of closed out for lo these many years. What I'm thinking of is perhaps at least a partial modification of a kind of impersonal or mindless market system in favor of something, perhaps an economy of use or something geared to use rather than simply market. Now, this is the first part of my question. In other words, what transformations are needed in the economic system to bring about the aims which Mr. Theobald sees as right. Now, secondly, I would like to know what are the, would he envision any sort of motivational problems? In other words, assuming that our deeply embedded in our culture is a kind of a work ethic, which demands that everybody work to gain some sort of real status in the group, and our status is so tied up with the notion of being a working, laboring person. Would he envision any motivational problems where in a society where work would not be a necessary condition for status in the group? And thirdly, what does he see, or perhaps he could review it, as I think he's already mentioned on occasion, what would be his moral justification for this sort of massive social change?
Well, I don't know if he has enough time.
Well, if he could just take, you know... Just
all right, Mr. Theobald, let's see what you can do with it.
How long have we got?
You've got about 10 seconds for the first question and about 22 seconds for the second one.
Okay, I think let's take the motivational question and the reason for change. The motivational question, I think the interesting thing about what is happening to our society is that we are being given freedom, and the time has now come where we have either got to be able to deal with our new freedoms or we will be, in a sense, destroyed by them. The question of how I justify proposing such massive change is that I am convinced that unless we do carry through such massive change, we will have a total societal breakdown. And I think that nothing less is adequate for making proposals for massive social change. Did I do it in 32 seconds?
Fairly well. Mr. Kinect?
Yes.
Thank you so much for calling, sir.
Okay, sure. Thank you.
Thank you. And I would like to just present this to you, Mr. Theobald. From what you have offered to us in terms of a proposal for a guaranteed income, and we did not get into the area of a what has been called a radical new curriculum that you've called for in terms of incoming university students, where you have suggested that there be a course in social reality, a course in how to invent the future, a course in how to think, and a course in practical art and communication. And you go on to say that our present educational system teaches young people to respect authority at a time when authority is no longer possible. Now, within this, am I right in assuming that you're asking America to assume a new role or a new philosophy? Is it possible that the philosophy or the American dream that we have believed in for so long is no longer the kind of thing that is effective in terms of our living today?
I think that, in a sense, the first part of the American dream, which was a decent standard of living for all and a minimum of toil, has been achieved. I think now we have the next part, which is to make real the statement that every American should be given power over his own life, power to make his own decisions, power to create in himself what he himself is, and that what we're being challenged by young and minority groups, blacks, by poor, is to make good on what the American dream really is, not the emaciated version that is something sometimes proposed on, but the reality of what was really being said when America was founded, and that what is needed perhaps is not to sort of repudiate the American dream, but to realize that it is a dream and that it has to be made real, and not to be scared now that we may be moving towards its accomplishment.
Is America ready for this, sir?
Well, if I think that this is a bad place to end, but I'm not going to dodge the question. It seems to me that America is not ready. The question is, can those of us who believe it should be ready mobilize and move fast enough to prevent the forces which I think are quite clearly moving against the realization?
Mr. Theobald, thank you so much for being our guest tonight on Night Call. This is Del Shields in New York. Good night and peace.
Time, same station. Presidential candidate, Democratic Senator George McGovern, on why he should be the next president of the United States. Listen tomorrow night. Discuss freely and responsibly your own personal opinions. Speak for yourself on Night Call. Produced by the United Methodist Church presented with National Council of Churches, National Catholic Office for Radio and Television, American Jewish Committee, and Urban Coalition.